Welcome back to the Persuasion Pitch Podcast, or if you are new, welcome. I'm your host, Jess, and here we dig into scams, other unethical business practices, and cults. If you guys have been listening to this podcast and you are not following or subscribed to it already, I would love for you guys to do that. And also, if you are enjoying this podcast, leave me a review and let's get into it. Okay, everyone, I am sitting down with Sarah, and she works in a school system, and that job is very admirable. So I appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity to come talk about this topic specifically. I think that schools are kind of hotbeds for MLMs, especially right now with how under fire teachers and educators are all over and how little we're paid. So
very underpaid.
And then kids too, you know. My story starts in Cutco when I was 17. I had just graduated high school, and I was looking for a job that would carry me through the summer because I needed something from graduation until I went off to college. And there weren't a lot of jobs that would take someone with those stipulations. So back then in 2009, it was a little different in terms of how much was available out on the internet. I got a letter from Vector Marketing inviting me for an interview, and I didn't know that they went out to everyone. I honestly, at that time, it was just not as readily available online. I actually did look them up, and I don't remember what I found, but I think I didn't find anything that was bad. It was just kind of very surface level information when I did a Google search. So I was, I took my dad with me because I was 17 at the time. So I had to bring him along.
You were just a kid still.
I was a kid, you know, and that's something that I'm really kind of, I guess, passionate about speaking about my story now, because I was a kid. I was 17 years old, and that's where they target. They really target that age range, kids that just graduated high school or are just about to. I was in that point. I was, going to leave for college far away. And so I knew I was going to be leaving whatever job I wanted to take. And that was what made this seem, so appealing to me at the time, because it seemed like that they didn't care that I was not going to be there for very long, basically.
Right.
So it could have been a big red flag, right? I went to this interview, and it started off with a group interview. And honestly, I think what they kind of do is just scan the room for who they think looks the most excited, who they think looks like they are going to be a decent salesperson, people to, someone wouldn't mind talking to them. And then they would pull you in for an individual interview. And this was up in Michigan where I grew up. And they didn't talk about what we were selling, not even that it was a sales job. It was just talked about as kind of this mysterious opportunity that they almost made it sound like an internship too. I think they used that terminology, an internship, a paid internship experience for in sales. And they use this vague language that doesn't really tell you exactly what you're doing. So I'm just sitting there, a 17-year-old, and my dad was an immigrant who didn't know very much about this kind of thing. I don't think my parents were ever involved in any kind of MLMs growing up. I didn't know any family members that were. So in my community, we weren't really, at least as far as I saw, I didn't know anyone that was involved in it.
Right. Yeah. A lot of these companies, they love to prey on certain communities. Let's say if someone came, like Herbalife, for example, they love to prey on the Latino community. And they're like, okay, you're here and I have this opportunity for you. If you can't get a job doing anything, you can actually own your own business. So I feel like they do, they target everyone, but like minorities, it's gross the way they do these things.
And Herbalife is really starting to make its way through the Arab community, because that's what I'm part of. And I've noticed a lot of those shake shops opening up in my hometown. And I've
been everywhere.
Sending a ton of messages to my friends. This is not what you think it is. Like, because I had a friend who runs a halal food Instagram, and they posted a picture from there, and they didn't know what it was. They had no idea. When I told them that's Herbalife, they were like, what's that? So I had a conversation with them about it, and they had no idea. And so that's why these things are so insidious. However, I think that at that time, especially, when we were hired in Cutco, I'm just going to kind of circle back to that now. You're not really encouraged to recruit people, at least not from the beginning when you start off as a salesperson. So when you get hired, they give you the whole training. You finally find out what you're going to do, which is selling these really overpriced knives. They train you on how to give the 30-minute presentation. They train you that it's social selling in the sense that you're getting, you know, your family and your friends and people that you know, and not just strangers. And the way that you keep it going is by getting follow-ups. So, you know, like different people, referrals from different people that you have, whatever, the meetings with. So that kind of mindset was really more about like making as many sales as you could. And they really pushed us to sell as much as we could, because the more you sold, the higher your percentage commission would be. So if you got to a certain amount of total sales, you would be making like 50% off of all your sales. And these are expensive knife sets.
Right.
So when you're, you know, 17 and someone tells you that you could have the opportunity to make like $400 in a half an hour because you sold an $800 knife set, I mean, that sounds like an amazing.
I did not know that they went up like that. And this was in 2009.
They might be more expensive now.
Wow. I don't know why, but I did not know. I do remember seeing like presentations like at Sam's Club or somewhere. And they were like, you know, whoever or something, like, I think they gave away a free knife. I don't know, something. But it was like they were hyping everyone up. But yeah, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. And I think that it's actually more expensive now. Because again, this was back in 2009. And yeah. Also, they had more expensive sets. So they had a bunch of sets priced at different ranges. And the way that they taught us was to start off with the most expensive and then work your way down to try to get someone to buy something. So it was very, like, we had all of these trainings that were mostly unpaid. So, you know, I was 17. I'd just gotten my license. I had just gotten a car. I was printing off directions off of MapQuest to go everywhere. And so I'm going to these meetings that we have, and I'm getting trained and not paid. And my parents are like, Sarah, why are you doing all of this? This is so much work. It doesn't seem like you're making enough to make it worth it. And at that point, I was 17. I really need everyone to understand that when you're that age, you're just so young. And
your brain's not even finished. Like, I mean, you're a counselor, like, you know, it's not even finished developing.
No. And they really take advantage of how excited you are to grow up, to have a job, to do something. And they also prey on that vulnerability of like, well, a lot of jobs don't pay very much. And this is like such a lucrative opportunity because you can make so much money. And really it's about, if you have a large social network that has disposable income, then you might do fairly well, but it's still not sustainable. And what I've kind of gathered after being out of it for so long and I made a lot of friends while I was in it. I will say that I made a lot of friends that I'm still friends with. They were really nice people. One of them told me that after I had left, because I was only in it for a couple months. And honestly, that was long in comparison to other people, because it seemed like people were turning over every couple weeks.
Right.
Except for like the management. So the management, what I found out is that once the like stream of new recruits kind of trickles down, you have someone that you think did a really good job in your group, you try to encourage them to open their own branch. So that's how the cycle keeps going.
Right.
And it feeds off of this young, constantly churning, turning 16, 17, 18. And when I say 16, 17, 18, I mean that because I worked, I did my internship in a high school actually with a counselor, and she told me that she had a bunch of students that would come in saying, oh, I'm going to be rich selling Cutco knives. And I'm like,
this should be illegal. Like, oh, man. You know, so real quick, I want to say that I am like floored right now because I just went to their website and I found a knife set that's $3,259. I don't know how I didn't know that, but what?
Yeah, they get away with some really crazy prices.
That's insane.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, wow. Yeah, and you know what? Like, when you're younger, like, a couple of months, even a month of working a job seems like it's, like, a year or a couple of years, you know, because you just did that for that, you know. So, it probably seems like it was a lot longer than a couple of months.
It was very intense. I was doing it every single day very intently. I have a very big family, a lot of, friends that their families would let me do presentations for them, bless their hearts. They were not mean to me, but also I'm sure some of them knew, that this was probably some sort of scheme. And something cracked the facade one time when I gave a presentation and someone had said, oh yeah, one of my nephews was doing this too a couple years ago. And I was
what happened?
I think that's what kind of cracked the facade first, but also a lot of little things. For example, you didn't have to pay to sign up, but you did have to pay for your knife set to.
You did or you didn't? Yeah. You did.
Oh. I think they took that away now. I did some reading and found that apparently they're not making people buy their starter set of knives for their presentations.
At full price?
Not at full price. Well, okay. And it's not like the biggest set. I think it's just a very basic set. I remember it costing just under $100. So, and it was just the basics that you could demonstrate everything with at a presentation.
Yeah.
But it was the only thing that we were encouraged to buy. There was no encouraging buying more products except for like trying to get your family to buy more products, which I feel like is, I don't know, kind of the same thing a little, because when you're that young, I mean, who are you selling to? Your parents, your uncles, your aunts, people who you're close to, and they want to see you successful no matter what.
Right.
What I remember them saying that it was like, you're just practicing with your parents and then you're going to go and have these more intense presentations. I'm like, it's not practice when you're really expecting them to buy something from you. That's a real deal presentation. Then you really are trying to pitch them something. So, it was very intense. It reminded me a lot of the Slave Circle. I watched that documentary.
I was going to mention that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking that it reminded me a lot of kind of the mentality that they had and like the work, the hustle. They did offer that like $15 per base appointment thing that is commonly referred to. I think now it's even like $17. And at that time, especially, that seems like a lot of money. You're making that for a half an hour appointment. However, that's if you don't sell anything. And I learned that that actually came out of the manager's pockets.
Oh. It also says, as a side note, it's on their website, every year we give away $40,000 to full-time undergraduate students who excel at selling Cutco. So whatever their definition is of excelling, but yeah.
I think that's the only way they continue is by this young, constantly churning group of kids.
Yeah.
That need a job, that are looking for something that will take them right away. A lot of times, even with fast food jobs, at least back then, it was a little bit more difficult to actually get a job because it was 2000 after 2008, and just, I don't know, it wasn't as available as they are now. I mean, it seems like people are really begging for workers.
Yeah.
But also, it just, it was about having the flexibility to leave it when I wanted to. So I remember being able to tell them, you know, I'm going to go away to college, so I'm not going to do it after this point. And they actually tried to convince me to do it up at college, that they had a branch up there that I could, like, you know, continue selling. And I was like, absolutely
not. Because you were around other college students who were young and that could potentially be sucked into this because they didn't know any better.
And they do advertise a lot to college students. I've seen a lot of their job postings on college, what's it called? Just, you know, wherever people are looking for jobs. Mm-hmm. And it's very disturbing to me how much they are able to do that without any sort of repercussions from the universities or even from, I don't know. I guess I don't know how high schools would do it because it just seems like, I don't know how they're getting people's information to start with, because they sent out letters to everyone. Like, how are they getting everyone's information to start with?
Yeah, that is suspicious. And there needs to be, you know, the anti-MLM movement has grown so tremendously, but I have been saying that there needs to be some type of flyer or letter or something that can be given to, like, school boards to not allow these MLMs to come in for job fairs. And, you know, some type of flyer for organizers of craft fairs that they don't allow MLMs. But on that note, you said that they're running pretty much rampant throughout the school system. So
they are. And I think, obviously, it's easy to see the appeal because kids can also try to sell to their teachers and try to sell to their friends' parents. And depending on the area and how much money people have, it can be very lucrative. And for some people, it can be very difficult. I think that's also a big challenge in that industry is it's very, driven by status, because if you don't have a family that has a lot of money and you go into this job, then you're probably not going to be as successful as someone who has a family that has a lot of money and whose sons have a lot of money. So it's just kind of, it's not sustainable is the point that I'm making. It's not a sustainable job. I know one person still who's in it from like that time. And he was someone who does the shows, like the, you know, at malls and Costco's and
things. Yeah, like I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how they select someone to do that, but as far as I know, he has made very good money. I'm sure he has, because it's more exclusive when you're in a mall or something like that by yourself. You can have people coming to you.
Right. Because you were just going to people's homes, right? So you didn't go to like a Sam's Club or whatever. So no. You were calling your friends, calling your family, and then you eventually run out of people to call, you know?
Well, their idea is that if you always ask people for referrals to other people, then you'll never run out.
No, you'll run out. Like, you'll run out. People only know so many people that will allow someone that they don't know to come into their home and do a knife demo.
Which also brings me to another point. I worry so much because, I mean, I was a girl, and I'm sure that other young girls would probably be putting themselves in danger going into some house.
Yeah. Just random, if you think about it, like, I don't know anyone that would do this, but I mean, I do know people that have went up to people like in Target and tried to pitch them an MLM. So I'm wondering, is there people that actually go up to people asking if they can do a demo in their home? I don't know. I mean, it's possible.
I remember when I was in high school, I was involved in rowing. And I remember I would help during the summer. I would be a coxie for the adults that were practicing rowing, and they would pay me just a little bit to do it. And so I was doing that summer too. And it was very little extra money, but I was doing that. And I would ask the adults that I was working with there. Oh man, that's so embarrassing. I can't believe that I did that.
You are a baby.
Yeah. And, but some of them let me come to their homes and but these were strangers, you know, and they could have been been very nice. So
yeah, that seems like just some a crime waiting to happen. Gosh, I hope not. But, you know, we were just discussing about this true crime. But yeah, I mean, could you imagine, like, there's so many dangerous people out there, and there's really, like, there's not that many people that you can, like, trust. But for, like, a young teenage girl to go into someone's home, like, I don't know, anything could happen. It's very dangerous. Yeah. And knives are involved.
Knives are involved. Right. I mean, granted, you're the one.
Yeah, but
you're the one with probably sharp knives. But
yeah, but maybe that's just my mind. I don't know.
I know.
But it still seems dangerous to me. So, a weapon's involved. I want to touch on the MLM. Okay, so you work in a school, and I know that MLMs run rampant within private Christian schools. I know someone that actually took her kid out of school and is homeschooling because the MLMs, like, it's so bad, which MLMs actually go against the Bible, but that's besides the point. So, but public schools, it's very alarming. But I know that, you know, MLMs don't discriminate on education. I know someone that has a PhD that was involved in an MLM. I mean, they can, you know, anyone. So, but, you know, for people who are teaching the younger generation about life, it's dangerous. It's so dangerous to me.
It is dangerous. I think the big thing, especially in public schools, is that teachers also, if they are bringing MLM stuff in there, there is the mentality that they can recruit their fellow teachers as well as sell to them and sell potentially to parents of kids, vice versa as well. I've had parents try to sell to me. And that's, I mean, it's just, it's a lot when you think about, first of all, teachers and educators are not paid very well. And so to think about how much money they're probably pouring into this scheme as well is very alarming, but also to think about that they are bringing that into their workplace and potentially damaging the relationships that they have with their coworkers. Because no matter what, when you're bringing something to sell into your workplace, no matter what workplace, but I think especially in education where people are very altruistic and they do the job because they genuinely love kids a lot of the times. So I think it becomes very easy to exploit that. And also to, because you feel exploited, feel entitled to just continue the cycle of exploitation by bringing these MLMs in.
Right.
You know, it's kind of it's like a self-fulfilling cycle.
Right.
Because teachers are so exploited, because they work so much, and a lot of it is unpaid. We do a lot of labor that is unpaid in general. And because of that, I think we're really primed for working in these companies because they do emphasize a lot of work for, I guess, like the greater cause and for a better community and all of those things that sound really good to a teacher. That's all of the things that we want to build in our schools. I'm sure that's why it appeals to them so much. I think it becomes even more dangerous when it comes to like essential oils too. I know a lot of teachers who diffuse them in their classrooms.
I'd be still freaking mad. I would be so mad. You know, but my son, he's 12. And I mean, he came home last week and said, everyone's drinking those pyramid scheme teas in my school, including teachers. I'm like, what? Like he knows how to point it out. I know that he would tell me if there was like an MLM oil or something. I know he would. But, you know, yeah, so teachers are extremely underpaid and they do so, I mean, all people that work within a school, they're underpaid, but they do so much. So they're already underpaid, but to put money into an MLM and potentially probably lose money after they're not making much to begin with. I mean, where does it end with that? You know, like you're speaking out, thank goodness, because you were like, do you tell your coworkers about your beliefs on MLMs, or what do they say about it?
So I've become a lot more vocal in the last, I would say, year, but that's also because I'm in a position of being a school counselor, and I'm not in the position also where I have admin that are up my behind right now. That's a thing too, is you have to be very careful. I work in a right to work state. So you can be fired for anything. And if someone doesn't like you, they can find any reason to fire you. So you have to be careful. And I've gotten a little bit more outspoken now because I feel my position as a school counselor is to influence the culture of the school a little more.
Yeah, for sure.
So I do make it known that I don't think it's appropriate. I also think that people who like bring out the advertisements and put them out in like the teachers' lounges and stuff like that. I mean, I've seen them tons of times. I haven't seen them at my current school, but I used to see them a lot, especially when I worked in a middle school. When I worked at a middle school, that was wild because I knew a woman who had a LuLaRoe pop-up like in the school. In
what?
The school. Yeah.
That is no, absolutely not.
She sent everyone a pair of leggings from the school during the pandemic and like posted about it on Facebook. I was like, that's, yeah. I'm like, wow, you just have a lot of inventory, girlfriend.
Oh, I'm sure. I am sure. Wow. So yeah, that's secondhand embarrassment for that person. But do you find that like smaller cities or smaller towns or rural areas, do you see that MLMs are more like within the schools that you work at, do you find like they're more prominent with smaller, maybe like country or rural areas? Do you see that?
I think it's both. I think it depends on the area. I've been in quite a few different areas and I've seen them all over. So I grew up in the Detroit area. I went to school in Central Michigan, and then I live in Florida now, in South Florida. And I've seen them all over the place. Now I know Michigan is quite well known for Amway and for DeVos family.
Oh, that's yes.
A lot of influence.
That's a whole rabbit hole in itself.
I know. I knew, what's her name from Dream? She's from Michigan.
Yeah.
And I just had to crack up because it's very prevalent in Michigan everywhere, especially the small towns, especially with like the essential oils, stick medicine and stuff like that. So I've seen a lot of it in that sense. I used to see a little bit less of it in my, the city that I grew up, especially because of the culture there. There wasn't, at least like where I grew up, there just wasn't the culture of like selling to your friends and family. That just wasn't something. At least not that I ever saw. So yeah, I don't, that's why this whole Herbalife thing's popping up everywhere in my hometown. I'm like, I can see why people fall for it though, because it seems more legitimate because they're opening a storefront.
Exactly. That's why it is so dangerous. It's so dangerous because they have a storefront, just like Primerica. They have a business, they have an office. So it looks like if you're looking in, you're like, oh, it's a tea shop, a shake shop. And I run a Facebook group called Herbalife is Trash. I hate these shops. And I will tell you that like 99% of these places throughout like Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama have me blocked from their Facebook pages. They know who I am. I don't know if they have like a group text, a group message happening. There's something happening because they know my name and they know to ban me whenever I've never even talked to them before. I'll go to their pages. I'm banned and I never even said anything. So yeah, it's very dangerous. And I said this the other day, and I mean, it's very, I put it on my TikTok, but you know, knowing the history of, and I don't want to go off of Herbalife tangent, but knowing the history of Herbalife, knowing everything that they've done and all of the lawsuits and all of the people they've harmed and even deaths over the stuff, if you still support that, I don't know if they have, like, these people have a heart, because if they've really dug deep, they don't know, okay, but if you truly know, and how can you support something so disgusting? I don't get it.
I think a lot of people don't understand the difference. Well, first of all, people have a very rose-colored glasses version of small businesses. Every small business in people's eyes cannot do harm. You know, gotta support all small businesses. A lot of small businesses are some of the most corrupt places because they exploit their employees out of a sense of, well, you are obligated to work here and make a part of the family and make this place grow.
With these Herbalife places, they think it's small businesses, but Herbalife.
Yes. Herbalife, it seems like it's a small business. People want to defend small businesses. They don't see the pattern of the shops to shop to shop, how they're all identical. They don't see that. They just see, oh, a lot, because I know someone actually who has friends who opened a tea shop, and she keeps defending them, in because I keep talking with her about it. I'm like, girl, these are Herbalife shakes. She posts them like all the time. I'm like, first of all, it's not good that you're drinking them all the time, because, you know, all of these potential health problems that have been shown to be caused by these products, allegedly. So it's hard because they think it's just someone who is being an entrepreneur. And I don't know, I think that's a lot of kind of wrapped up in this country with a lot of different angles and how we view people and entrepreneurship and all of that. I think it plays into it, especially with Herbalife, because I think they're able to mask it pretty well. I think Cutco is able to mask it pretty well as well under their plan that they have. It doesn't seem like an M when you first kind of look at it, and then you if you haven't been part of it or don't talk to someone who is in it, you don't realize how unsustainable it is, how they burn through young people so quickly. It's a constant burn cycle of new young people. And just it's not sustainable. I'm sure if they just went to a direct model where they just sold their stuff in stores, they could probably do pretty well. Their knives are pretty decent. They're just very expensive.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that.
Yeah, I mean they're not bad products.
They better not be bad for $3,000. They better be cutting the food for me. Like, are you serious? I shouldn't even have to lift a finger.
I mean, it's a lot of money, and you're encouraged when you're in that company to not be afraid to ask people to spend that, because people spend money for a lot of things for their home. However, That's absolutely ridiculous and so overpriced.
It is.
So yeah, that's the way that they keep it going, though. That's the way that they're able to afford to pay out people, I think. So
yeah, and they've been in business for quite a while. I'm curious to know if, you know, they put their Cutco stamp on it, but I'm sure there are knives that are just as good and I guess made out of the same material for a lot less. I'm sure there is.
I'm sure there are. I looked up, so they changed, they're like their parent company is called Alcoa, A-L-C-O-A. And yeah, they changed their name, and they changed it in 2008. That's why there wasn't a lot of information about them when I looked them up.
Their logo is in the shape of a pyramid.
Shut up, is it?
I swear. Put it in your computer right now. A-L-C-O-A. It's a pyramid.
Oh my God.
I cannot.
It's actually the top of the pyramid, which is even worse.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So that's like LuLaRoe had the pyramid necklace that everyone won or got if they met a certain criteria. They got a gold pyramid. Like, can you make it any more obvious?
I feel like when you're in that level of kind of like deception, like they get off on how much they can make it so obvious what they're doing.
Like, these fools actually have the logo is the actual pyramid and they still don't get it. That is so messed up.
That is so messed up.
It really is. Wow. What do you think that we can do, like, as parents to children who have, you know, kids in school? Like, is there anything that parents should be doing without pissing people off, like the school administrators? Like subtle ways to say, hey, MLMs, you know, shouldn't be brought in here, and I think you need to make, I don't know if there is there a way?
So I think parents have a lot more power and say than, like, for example, an individual teacher. So teachers individually might not have as much say so, especially with our unions not having as much power. They're just kind of barely keeping it together as it is and keeping collective bargaining. However, I think parents, if they have some sort of organization, I know that there are some schools that have really robust PTOs. I think that would be an amazing place to start with educating the admin on the harms of those companies and not allowing them to be present in schools. I also think that in general, though, we need to have a conversation about no solicitation in general in schools.
Right.
That needs to come from every aspect, not just MLMs, anything that like anyone makes and wants to bring it. No, it's school does not need to be a place where those kinds of transactions should be happening. It's a place of learning. It's not a place of, well, I mean, you know, you can learn anywhere really, but I mean, I'm just, it's what kind of message are you sending when
everything, be a professional, like
when everything is constantly a transaction. So it's just, it really kind of soils the workplace environment. It also makes it not the most enjoyable workplace for kids. I think because especially if there's any sort of hostility between the teachers, if a teacher feels some sort of way about the other teachers not supporting their scheme, it's going to become apparent to a lot of people.
Right. Just,
it's hard to hide that. I mean, I know a lot of people in schools who sell with MLMs, and I can tell that they're always trying to plant the seed in everyone's mind. I can tell, I can sense it. And right. So it's just, I think that if you are not willing to support it, then it kind of creates a weird work environment with everyone there, especially if you've got like competing ones. So, I mean, it's just, it's wild. I've seen them so many different iterations in different schools. I worked at a school where there was one woman who just was the Young Living lady, and everyone got their Young Living oils from her. And she would like ask everyone, what do you want? And I'm going to place the big order, and everyone, whatever you want, you just pay me and I'll get it. And they were all diffusing that stuff in their classrooms. And it stressed me out so much. I mean, I know it's how ironic, because aromatherapy is supposed to make you feel less stressed, but it stressed me out walking into some of these classrooms and getting like hit with a whiff of whatever they were diffusing. And I have a pretty sensitive, you know, nose and allergies. So I start sneezing pretty badly, but I can't imagine. I mean, I'm just waiting for the day for a kid to get really, you know, violently ill from this stuff.
Right. Yeah, they could have a reaction.
They could have a reaction. They could have asthma attacks.
Right. I mean, you should not, that should not be allowed ever.
I know.
And it should have never been allowed from the very start. And they're getting way too relaxed.
I mean, that one was definitely the most, I think the most wild, that and the LuLaRoe thing. I mean, I see, it's been a lot. Like I knew a lot of teachers that sold Young Living my first year of teaching. A lot of them were religious though. So I kind of gathered that a lot of them were getting it from church. And I knew a lot of people from my college town that were very religious that started selling about the same time. I don't know.
So ironic though, because Gary Young held his baby underwater and killed the child. So how does that go with your Christianity? But anyway, that's besides the point, I guess. But it's just so weird to me.
It's so weird to me. I mean, the whole prosperity gospel and thing like that, that's weird to me. I mean, I can see how it ties in so beautifully with MLMs. So I think that's why they work so well together.
Yeah.
Right now. Yep. And that's probably why in like private schools that you see them more often. Also because private schools are not necessarily held to the same standards all the time as public schools are.
Right.
That's not to say that like all private schools are bad. And you know, there's a lot of really prestigious private schools, but people are people no matter what, and they will they will be roped into things no matter how intelligent they are. And that's why when you're in a position, like as a teacher, as a counselor, as a principal, as anyone who works in a school, and you have kids, parents, people who are in a lower position of power to you, what you do and say influences them. It makes it normal. It makes it okay. It makes it seem valid. If it's just having the product in your classroom, it just makes it seem like it's a normal thing. Like it's something that everyone is involved with. So therefore there's no real harm in it. And that's where I really feel our job as educators is to kind of change the message out there right now, is to make it so that way these things are not in our classrooms and we're not sending the message to kids and families,
right,
that this is okay, that this is normal, to try to sell to people constantly, because it's just, it's not healthy. It's not an appropriate way to have a workplace relationship, especially in something like education or mental health, you know? So it's just, it's difficult to break people out of that mentality though, because I think especially again, with going back to how underpaid they are and we are and how much student loan debt we are under, it becomes really easy to stop thinking about like the bigger picture and just think about how can I make myself money so that way I can do the job that I love, but also keep myself afloat and live a valuable life that has some more joy to it than just, you know, paycheck to paycheck living.
Right. So, and they get, and you know, as a counselor, they get a feeling when they're surrounded by people who also like sell stuff, or they're like in group chats together, or they go to a party, they like the feeling of being surrounded by like-minded individuals, like friends, I guess, like little groups. They like the way it makes them feel, it makes them happy.
Yeah.
So yeah, but you can have friend groups without there being a product or recruitment involved with it. Like you can have friends, like nobody's stopping you from having friends in a friend group. But I guess because they have, I don't know. And I do want to say that I know someone personally, and if they're listening, they know who they are. They're president of a PTO in my neighboring city. They know who they are. And they sell for a pyramid scheme. And I know that she takes her position as president of the PTO and she sells her scheme and she is promoting it to all the other parents. And it makes me sick.
Oh,
yeah.
Nasty, gross.
I hope you're listening.
Ew. That is such a gross abuse of power.
It really is. And yeah, like I would never in a million years could have ever sent my child to a school where the president of the PTO is shilling a disgusting skincare line. Yeah, it's awful. Awful. But thank you so much for being on. I appreciate it.
Of course, I really enjoyed having this conversation and I hope that it was valuable for anyone listening.
I know that it will be, that's for sure.
I want to add that Sarah has started a Facebook group. It's called Educators Against MLMs, and I'm going to link that down in the show notes. So if you or someone you know is an educator that wants to help make a change with allowing MLMs in schools, then I hope that you guys will join. If you are a listener to this podcast already, you already know that I'm going to say thanks so much for listening, and I do mean that. I hope that everyone has a great rest of the day and a great rest of the week.